Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Most businesses are already running at a profit, and the incremental cost of continuing to serve a customer doesn't cost a business the same amount of money as it costs to get that customer up and running in the beginning. The acquisition costs have been recouped, and now the maintenance and continued support costs are less than they were in the beginning. Additionally, we have the privilege of increasing our prices over time as the customer works with us and becomes more committed and more dependent on our products and services. So each additional dollar they spend with us is more profitable. So that's why keeping customers longer dramatically impacts your bottom line. But it's not just a financial improvement. You allude to kind of the emotional improvement of what it's like to be in an organization where the customers are happy. Well, guess what? The employees are happy. And I view customer experience and employee experience as being two sides of the same coin. As we improve and polish one, the other side improves and polishes on its own. So happier customers make for happier employees. Happier employees make for happier customers. And suddenly all boats are rising together.
Hi there, Innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. First of all, Happy New Year 2020. I hope you've had not only an awesome week so far, but also an awesome start to the new year. This is our first published episode for 2020, and I'm really looking forward to sharing with you more awesome conversations with wonderful guests during 2020 on the InnovaBuzz podcast. I trust you enjoyed our last conversations in 2019 with Sheila Heen, the author of Difficult Conversations, and with Summer Oase, email conversion strategist. I'm really excited to kick off this new year of InnovaBuzz podcasts with my guest today, Joey Coleman, who's the author of Never Lose a Customer Again. Joey helps companies keep their customers. As a keynote speaker, a workshop leader, and consultant, he helps businesses design creative ways to engage their customers, especially in the crucial first 100 days of the customer life cycle. Joey has a really eclectic background that has seen him defend alleged criminals as a criminal lawyer, sell custom research to Fortune 500 executives, race along the Great Wall of China, juggle in front of the Taj Mahal, MC charity auctions, work in the White House, sing a solo at the Kennedy Center, and also travel to 48 countries and still counting. Today, his focus is on speaking, coaching, and writing about all things customer experience. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build their professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal clients. Now, to help you get clarity about who your ideal client is, take a look at our Marketing Master Mini Class. In less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity on your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master Mini Class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Joey talked to me about why the first 100 days of having a customer are so important and how to overcome buyer's remorse. He explained why it's important to understand what the customer really wants and then focusing all your efforts on helping them achieve that result. And he explained how to intentionally engineer a customer experience that will generate more sales, but more importantly, generate an army of raving fans that will want to tell everyone about your company. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Joey Coleman. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Boulder, Colorado in the USA, Joey Coleman, who's a professional speaker and a writer on all things customer experience, and he's also author of the book Never Lose a Customer Again. Welcome to the podcast, Joey. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Oh, it's a privilege to be a guest, Jürgen. Thanks so much for inviting me. And as I'm in about 2 feet of snow here, and I'm guessing it's plenty balmy in Australia, I wish I was there.
It's not. It's actually cold and windy here for the time of year.
Oh, surprising.
No snow, but yeah, we're kind of sick of this wintry weather here and looking forward to some summer.
There you go. Fair enough.
Yeah. Joel Kletke, who was our guest on episode 233 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, Joey. He's a big fan of yours, so a big hello to Joel.
Oh, big hello and thank you from Joel. That's great.
Now, you help companies keep their customers, helping them to design a business, creative ways to engage their customers, but also especially in the customer life cycle in the early stages, the first 100 days you talk about in your book, that's the critical phase. And since I'm on a mission to make marketing human again, and I include the full customer journey in that marketing, because getting customers to buy something is only the beginning of the experience. And so I'm really looking forward to talking all things customer retention and delighting customers with you today, Joey.
Well, as now,
before we talk about that, I noticed you started off in law school and then you landed a job in the White House and you worked in the Secret Service and in the CIA, and then you were a consultant for Fortune 500 companies. Then you're a criminal defense lawyer. You taught postgraduate level MBA students and you ran a division of promotional products program. Then you ran your own ad agency and now you're a speaker and writer on all things customer experience. Now, How does all that come together, and what's the common thread there that led you to where you are today, and what are the experiences that add value there?
Well, Jürgen, I appreciate the question. You know, often when people hear my background, they think one of two things: either, wow, this will be a fun guy to talk to, or boy, this guy can't hold down a single job, can he? Arguably, probably a little bit of both. What's interesting is, as I was going through my career to date, every job that I had, I didn't take the next job because I hated the job I was in. I've been fortunate to take the next job because I found something I like to do even more. And the thread that connects every position I've had together is the human experience and the human condition. In every position I've ever had, the way you excelled at that position, the way you succeeded in that position or in that role, was through a keen understanding of why do humans do the things they do. And what can we do to convince or persuade or encourage them to do the things we'd like them to do? So whether it's working in government and trying to convince people to vote for your candidate, whether it's working as a criminal defense lawyer and trying to get people to find your client not guilty, whether it's teaching in a classroom and trying to get your students to do the assignments and pay attention in class, whether being a speaker and trying to persuade audiences that they might want to think differently about how they treat their customers, the common thread was people and why people do the things they do. So I've been a student of the human condition for many years, and I'm excited at how I've been able to apply some of these different career experiences that have built on each other over the years to create the message that I share with audiences today.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a fascinating way to look at it. And you know, my background is in science, and I spent time in laboratory and then ended up in marketing, all in the corporate world, and then started my own business doing all kinds of things, and was always keen on technology and how to use technology. But it's, in some ways, there's that common thread as well of
yes,
the human thing. And today, I think in today's world with technology, we tend to forget that a little bit and abdicate to the technology and let the technology handle some of those interactions and forget about the human component.
I agree. And I think that's why we see many larger businesses struggling as smaller businesses are able to create more personalized connection and interaction with their customers. We see customers seeking that out, the more bespoke experience, the local experience, the experience where they don't feel like they're a number, rather they feel like they matter as a human or as an individual.
It's a little bit timely that we're having this conversation right now because it's Cyber Monday as we record this in yes. the US at least. We're a little bit ahead. But what I'm getting a lot of and Black Friday was last Friday and then Cyber Monday is offers of, okay, you know, you can have 50% off for the Black Friday or Cyber Monday deal of this product. And there's two things there that particularly annoy me. The first one is, I'm an existing customer, so why are you sending me this offer? Because I'm already subscribed to that product. And the second thing is
full price, not the 50% off your offer.
Right, exactly. That's the second thing is that, you know, that then I look and say, well, maybe I can get a reduced deal on this. And it's no, this is only for existing for new customers.
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. I think it's fascinating how many businesses will happily treat people who've never done with business with them better than the people who've been loyal customers for years. In my personal opinion, the longer you've been with a company, the less you should pay because the less it is that it requires to actually manage your account. Once you're set up and they've gone through the onboarding and getting you, you know, dialed in and your account built out and learned about you, most businesses, we go on to autopilot. It doesn't require any additional time or effort, yet the price seems to go up year after year. And to your point, it drives me crazy when they're offering a better deal to the new customer than the existing customer. In fact, true confession here, Jürgen, I've actually canceled service to then sign up as a new customer to get the better deal on more than one occasion. And I don't think I'm alone in doing that. And I think it's just, it boggles my mind that businesses have designed their practice to behave that way.
Mm. Yeah, I've certainly canceled. The internet service providers and the phone companies are classic for doing that. I mean, they don't wait for Cyber Monday. They're always chasing new customers with better offers, but they don't tell the existing customers that there is a better offer, first of all, if it's available to existing customers, or I'll often get the response, no, that's only for a new customer. So I said, well, okay, we'll cancel my subscription because I will then either become a new customer or go to somebody else and become their
new
customer.
And be a new customer for them. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So one of the things you point out in the book is that, and these statistics are pretty widely published, that 20 to 70% of customers stop doing business with their supplier in the first 100 days, which I think is pretty staggering when you think about that. 100 days, that's 3 months. So if you're thinking of a long-term service like an internet connection or a phone or something else that is a long-time service, and when you consider the lifetime value of that customer, to lose up to 70% in those first 3 months is just crazy. So why are those first 100 days so important?
Well, it's interesting. I totally agree with you that it's insane that so many people would be leaving so quickly. And it's across every industry. Software as a service averages 20%. The restaurant industry is 45 to 90%, depending on the type of restaurant and cuisine that you have. Auto mechanics is 68%. Banks is 32%. Cell phone companies is 22%. I mean, these numbers are ridiculous. I think there are a couple reasons why that happens, and I think there's a couple reasons why the first 100 days are important. So if I can kind of take your question and divide it into two parts, if I may, why does that happen? Well, we alluded to it earlier in our conversation when we talked about the Cyber Monday or the Black Friday deals. Most businesses are run by people who came up through marketing and sales, not by people who came up through account management. Additionally, most people that are in account management within an organization report to the head of sales or marketing, who then reports to the CEO. So getting a message about the customer experience or what's happening with existing clients is difficult to get that message all the way up the chain to the senior management team. Usually it gets stopped along the way by people who are incentivized to talk about the new customers or the prospects. Additionally, as human beings, and we talked earlier about the human condition, we are predisposed to like the chase more than the catch. We need only look to our dating lives to see this play out. People seem to be more excited about going on dates than about getting married. They seem more excited about something that's new and fresh and interesting than something that is familiar and consistent over time. So we have a biological imperative that is working against us. We have an organizational structural imperative that is working against us. And that's before we even decide that we're going to do business with the company. Then their behavior actually makes it worse, because in most organizations, the people who are incentivized on new prospects and new sales are paid more, have higher status in the organization, receive more publicity and more face time than the people who are responsible for account management or retention or those type of behaviors. Why does the first 100 days matter, though? All the research shows that if you get the first 100 days right, you can have a customer for life. If you properly lay the foundation of onboarding a new customer, you can have a long-term relationship. What's interesting is, in the same way the statistics show that 20 to 70% will leave in the first 100 days, the research also shows that if on day 101, you feel great about the organization you're doing business with, the typical customer will stay for 5 years. So the lifetime value is very clearly defined and most specifically influenced by how you feel in those first 100 days. Why is that? Well, there's a couple reasons, the primary one being the concept of buyer's remorse. We've all heard of buyer's remorse, yet when I ask audiences around the world, how many of you have a system and process in place in your business designed to address buyer's remorse, no one ever raises their hand. We've all heard of it. We all know it's real. It's scientifically proven. We see this. And in fact, as the value of the purchase increases, the feelings of buyer's remorse increase as well. Yet nobody wants to pay attention to this. So a big challenge is, right after the purchase, the customer starts doubting it. We jump full steam ahead as the business providing the service or the product. And that delta between our emotion and their emotion, if we never close that, it only increases over time as the relationship continues. Number one. Number two, we have a tendency as businesses to forget that our new customers have never done business with us. They have no idea what's coming next. We may say, oh, but we gave them the instructions, or we gave them a proposal that outlined all the steps of our process. The fact of the matter is, they don't read the instructions or the proposals the same way you don't, right? This is the human condition. We don't read things that we sign. We want to take it out of the box and make it work, or we want someone to tell us what's happening next. Too many businesses rely on their customers to fill in the blanks instead of filling in the blanks for them, instead of holding their hand and navigating them through the process. And finally, I think the third major reason why most businesses fail to have success in the first 100 days is they're not paying attention to what the customer really wants. They're assuming that the customer is buying the product or a service for a specific reason without confirming that with the customer, and then tracking whether the customer achieves that goal. For example, in almost every closet, at least in the United States, I won't speak disparagingly of our friends in Australia and other listeners around the world, but at least in the United States, you can pretty much go to any home and go into the closet and find an article of clothing that was purchased but has not yet been worn. It may still even have the tags on it. Here's the interesting thing. If you were to ask those customers what they thought of that brand, they probably think less of that brand than when they purchased it. Not because the brand has done anything wrong, but because the goal that they were trying to accomplish when they purchased that shirt, for example, has not been achieved because they've not yet worn the shirt. See, businesses think that the accomplishment is the customer walking out of your store with the product. No, my friends, the accomplishment is the customer using your product and getting the benefit or the value for which they made the purchase. Most businesses don't pay attention to that. They don't track it. They don't loop back in with the customer to celebrate when that actually happens. And as a result, they get a lot of one-time purchases instead of long-term loyal customers.
Yeah, well, what you've just said there, I think, is worth the price of admission just to get that message clear, which is that, you know, what you're actually selling to the customer is not the product or the service. It's the experience that they want to have from that. So what would you recommend that businesses do, first of all, to really understand the true needs of the customer? Even before they sell to them is probably a good time to do that.
I find that it's usually a good idea to do that. Well, even my guess is most of the folks listening to your podcast already are involved in the business. Some certainly maybe are thinking of starting a business, but most folks that I come to, they're already in process with their business. So it's a little difficult for them to buy into starting from scratch. Mm-hmm. So what I like to suggest for most businesses that are already in operation is that we just map the current customer journey. What is the current customer journey from a prospect through the decision-making process to their use of the product? See, most customer journey maps that are taught in business schools or in business books put a lot of emphasis on marketing and sales. Hmm. How do you convince the prospect that your product has the right benefits and features? How do you persuade them to give you a try? How do you make sure they're aware of your various offerings? And how do you convince them to actually spend their money? And then the journey stops. Now, I know from your work that I'm familiar with, we're not even halfway around the circle, so to speak, in the graphic
that
you share with your audiences when they get to that point. But I think you would agree with me, most businesses stop there. Mm. They stop and say, well, you've made the purchase. Therefore, we're done. Let's go find someone new to sell to. Instead of paying attention to everything that happens on the back end of that clock, if you will, all the things that are happening after the purchase, the usage, their comfort using it. If they have any problems, the customer service that comes out of that, their referrals, they're talking to it about their friends, the feedback from you as the organization reaching out to the customer saying, hey, is everything going well? Have you had any problems? Were you able to get it up and running? What can we do to be of support? All the various conversations that happen after the sale, I would posit are just as important, if not more important, than the conversations that happened before. So the first step is to map out that journey. Usually when we map that journey, that alone is enough to give us dozens of places where we can improve the journey. Dozens of places where we can come in and say that thing that we thought was very clear could instead be improved. That thing that we thought was very obvious may not be as obvious to our customers. What can we do to increase the communication throughout the journey to make sure that our customers are being taken care of every step of the way?
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. And certainly I'm a big fan of not stopping the customer journey once the sale is made, because really in my mind, a lot of the important work is afterwards. And I had a conversation with, and I'm kind of talking to George all the time, but George Bryant on an episode a little while ago on the Innova Buzz podcast. And one of the things he says is that customers don't necessarily just buy your product or service. They're also looking for accountability. So whether it's a piece of clothing, have you worn that shirt and how was it? Did it make you look good? How did it feel? Did it keep you warm? Whatever it might have been. Looking at the experience that they're having, but also the accountability, particularly with things like health supplements or weight loss or exercise programs, where, how many people buy gym programs, sign up for a whole year, and then maybe go once or so, twice?
Absolutely.
In that year.
And here's the thing. I've actually been in conversations with gym owners who have customers on monthly subscription who I've said, well, how many of them came in the last month? And many don't know the answer, which is in itself staggering. But the ones that do know the answer, I've actually had some say to me, well, we don't want to tell them because then they might cancel. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to be in business where the bulk of my revenue is people who forgot they're paying me.
Yeah.
That just does, for me personally, I understand that that's an effective business model in the online course programs and in subscription models and in things like that. But I think that eventually catches up with you. And the problem is when it does, often it's too late to do anything. When they cancel because they've been paying for months and haven't gotten any value, your likelihood of getting them back into the fold, getting them to sign up again, is very small, because now they feel like they've already given you a lot of money with no value. You're going to have to provide a tremendous amount of value without any additional money before they'll feel that the playing field has been leveled and they're interested in paying you again.
Mm, yeah. I was chatting with a friend of mine who runs a local gym and swimming pool complex a little while ago, and he said, he gave me the statistics, and I can't remember the number now, but it was a pretty staggering number of people that were on monthly payments and hadn't been in the gym for, I think he said, 2 or 3 years. And they did an audit and then sent emails out to people. And one of the people in that conversation said, well, why would you do that? They might stop paying. And he said, well, it's kind of bad if they're paying us and not using the service.
Absolutely. Well, and you get to decide, because it gives business owners a false impression as to how successful their business actually is. Hmm. Because if all of a sudden I was working with someone recently who an email accidentally was sent to all of the customers in their customer base saying, we see you haven't used this in a while. Do you still want your subscription to continue? They got hundreds of cancellations based on one email. And the team was going crazy. They were like, what happened? Why are we getting all this cancellation? And they realized the email went out. And what was fascinating is there's a conversation internally, not about how did the situation get this bad, but the conversation is about how do we make sure we never send an email like that again? And I'm thinking to myself, I think you're having the wrong conversation. I think the conversation should be different, right? What are we doing to make sure that the people who are paying us are actually getting value? Now, I understand in a gym scenario or in a health supplement scenario, we're recording this, as you said, it's a Cyber Monday. It's just following Thanksgiving here in the United States. I guarantee that the gyms are not that full today because everybody just ate Thanksgiving dinner last week, right? But if that's every week, we have a problem. If it's 1 week, if it's here and there, that's not an issue. And people are happy to absorb that and everybody understands. But if I'm paying for a subscription that I'm getting no value for, and the only reason you're still getting money is because I forgot, that's not a long-term sustainable business plan.
Yeah, exactly. And now we talked about the customer journey a little bit. You talk about 8 phases in the book of the customer journey. Could you walk us through those?
Absolutely. So there are 8 phases, I believe, of the customer journey. And in my model, they all start with the letter A. And the idea here is if you get all of them right, it's like getting straight A's in school. Your customers will give you good marks. They'll be very happy. So the phases are as follows. Phase 1 is the assess phase. This is when a prospect is considering whether or not they want to do business with you. In common parlance, we might call this marketing and sales. This is before they become a customer. They're learning about your product. They're learning about your service. We then go to phase 2, admit. This is when the prospect acknowledges that they have a problem or a need. They admit that you might be able to help them, and they decide to sign up for your product or sign up for your service. They hand you their hard-earned cash. They sign on the dotted line of the contract. They officially transition from being a prospect to a customer. Almost immediately after that happens, they move to phase 3, the affirm stage. This is that buyer's remorse that I mentioned earlier, where they begin to doubt the decision that they just made. In this stage, we need to do everything we can to affirm their purchase and let them know they're going to be well taken care of. We then come to phase 4, the activate stage. This is the first real moment of truth, where the customer gets your product or they experience your service for the first time. In this phase, we want to energize the relationship. We want to activate the relationship. We want to let the customer know that doing business with us is going to be unlike any other business experience they've ever had. We then move to the acclimate stage. This is phase 5. Now, I will tell you, Jürgen, this is where most businesses, if they haven't already stumbled a little bit, this is where the wheels fall off the train, right? Everything starts to fall apart. In the acclimate phase, you have to help your customer get familiar with your way of doing business. You've sold your product or service hundreds of times, thousands of times, maybe tens of thousands of times. But to a new customer, this is the first time they've ever done business with you. Any excitement they had about the possibility and potential has really started to wear off, and now they're in the meat of it. They're using your product. They're experiencing your service. What is your job? Your job is to hold their hand and help them acclimate to the interactions they're going to have with your organization. We then, after a period of time, which is different for every business, move to phase 6. the accomplish phase. This is when the customer achieves the goal that they had when they originally decided to do business with you. As I mentioned earlier, everyone who makes a purchase has a goal that they're trying to accomplish. They want to wear the shirt to the wedding and look good and have someone fall in love with them so they can have a wedding, right? They have a big goal they're trying to accomplish. If we don't know what their goal is, and if we don't track the goal and celebrate when they achieve it, they're going to forget. They won't celebrate. They won't become loyal to us. We then move to phase 7, the adopt phase. This is when the customer is completely loyal to you and your brand. They adopt you. They take responsibility for the relationship. They're not going to shop around on price. They're not going to look at your competitors because they have been committed to you. And then, and only then, do we reach phase 8, the holy grail. The advocate phase, when your customer becomes a raving fan, referring friends and family and colleagues alike to your business. This is the goal that every business has. We want to get more referrals. The problem is most businesses try to jump from the sale to the referral without going through all the other steps in between. So in short, those are the 8 phases of the customer journey. And if you do it right, Jorgen, and you get to the end where they're an advocate, you've now earned the permission to sell them new products and new services. When you do, they don't come to this phase that they're in, the adopter phase or the advocate phase. They go back to phase 1. The assess phase, where they think, is this new product or service worth it? They decide, I'm going to buy it. They begin to doubt the decision they just made. You have to activate them and acclimate them, even though they may have been a customer for many years. The rinse and repeat cycle of that relationship is often something that is missed in conversations about customer loyalty, because we presume, well, if they've been a customer with us for the last 2 years, surely they'll be a customer for the next 2 years. That's not the way humans work.
Yeah, that's right. That's a really good point. And also with a new product or service, whilst they might know the business, there's unfamiliarity with the new product or service and whether or not you're the best person to actually do that thing because you're an expert in this other thing that we've been working with you on.
Absolutely. And many times when we introduce a new product or a new service, it's with new people on the team that we haven't met before. Maybe we've signed up for an additional offering and now we're dealing with a different department that we don't have a relationship with. But as a customer, we expect them to know our old history. We expect them to know that we've been a loyal customer and to treat us as such, as opposed to just shifting to, oh, let's start everything from scratch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that raises an interesting question. And I think you talked to this in the book as well. When the customer experience is really good, what impact does that have on the business itself internally?
So there's impacts all over the place that are incredibly beneficial to the business. Let me share a couple statistics, if I may. First of all, this comes from Harvard Business School, Stanford Business School, and Frederick Reichheld, the gentleman who came up with the Net Promoter Score that I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with. If we can keep 5% of the customers who would otherwise leave, just 5%, it will increase profits 25 to 100%. Now, what's crazy about that is some of the listeners may be thinking, I was told there would be no math listening today's show. let me explain that math a little bit because it seems odd. See, most businesses are already running at a profit, and the incremental cost of continuing to serve a customer doesn't cost a business the same amount of money as it costs to get that customer up and running in the beginning. The acquisition costs have been recouped, and now the maintenance and continued support costs are less than they were in the beginning. Additionally, we have the privilege of increasing our prices over time as the customer works with us and becomes more committed and more dependent on our products and services. So each additional dollar they spend with us is more profitable. So that's why keeping customers longer dramatically impacts your bottom line. But it's not just a financial improvement. You allude to kind of the emotional improvement of what it's like to be in an organization where the customers are happy. Well, guess what? The employees are happy. And I view customer experience and employee experience as being two sides of the same coin. As we improve and polish one, the other side improves and polishes on its own. So happier customers make for happier employees. Happier employees make for happier customers. And suddenly all boats are rising together.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really great point. And I think, you know, the whole environment is constructed in a way that business is easy for the customer and they're happy. And that must translate into business being easier for the employees that are delivering the product or services.
Absolutely. You know, I had an interesting conversation, Jürgen, about a year ago with someone who read my book, and we were talking about what they had done in their business to implement some changes. The book is very much written as a case study example. There are 46 case studies, small, medium, and large companies around the world, and it's very much written as a blueprint for how to implement these ideas in your business. And the owner was telling me about the success he's had, and he said, but you know, Joey, there was something that I wasn't expecting to happen. I said, what's that? He said, my employees are more excited to come to work than ever before. My employees are coming up with new ideas of new products and new offerings because they're spending less time dealing with complaints from existing customers and they're feeling better about where they work. And so what he found is not only did this focus on experience enhance customer retention, but it enhanced employee retention as well. And so I do think there's a benefit to both sides of the house.
Yeah, yeah, that's a wonderful point and great statistics, yeah. Now, you talk about intentionally engineering customer experiences. So how do you go about that? I mean, if there's a business that's saying, well, you know, we don't have a system for dealing with customer remorse. We do have an onboarding system, but it's kind of like, okay, you've signed up, now here are the next steps. It's not really dealing with the feeling of remorse or the doing the affirm process or steps that you described earlier. So how do you engineer an experience or a set of experiences that really provides a great customer journey?
Well, I think there's a number of ways to do it. Often what I think about is where do we start first, right? And so I think a great opportunity for every business is to look at each of those eight phases and decide what is the emotion that we want our customers to feel in this phase. You mentioned the affirm phase, when they're beginning to doubt the decision they just made. What is the emotion we would want them to feel? Well, instead of feeling doubt, I think we'd want them to feel confidence. So how can we give them confidence in the decision they made? Well, there's a couple ways we can do that. Number one, we can remind them of the thought process that they went through. A way to do that is, for example, to send a thank you note that says, Jürgen, thank you so much for signing up to be a customer of our service. We loved getting to know you in those four calls that we had, and we really feel we have a keen understanding that your goal is to do X, Y, and Z in the coming year. We feel confident that we're going to be able to partner with you to do that, and your signing up to use our ABC product is really going to help you achieve that. We're excited to work with you, and we look forward to our first meeting. That kind of note alone is enough for someone to say, oh, I've been heard. I matter. They know what I'm trying to accomplish, and they're committing on paper to work with me to do that. Lots of times, that's all we need to do. So we can make someone feel confident just by letting them know they've been heard and that we're ready for the next step. You may decide that an emotion you want them to feel is excited. Well, then you should be excited when you're talking to them about it. You may want the emotion to be that they feel joyous and happy. Well, are those the emotions you're bringing to every conversation during that phase? Or are you checking things off a checklist that have to be done at that point in the implementation? You know, I think there's a real opportunity. A lot of people will say, well, you know, business is business. It's not, you know, personal. No, it's 100% personal. Business is emotional. It is messy. It is personal. It is humans dealing with humans. The sooner we acknowledge that our customers have emotional needs and we do our best to deliver on those emotional needs, the happier everyone in the relationship will be.
Yeah, that's a great point, human to human. And I know you talk quite a bit about when people make a distinction between B2C and B2B, and you know, I say this a lot as well, particularly when you're dealing B2B in a large company, that it's still a person on the other end.
100%. You know, people presume that because they work for a large company that they don't still operate as a human being. They do. Granted, they may not be spending their personal money, but they're spending the business's money. And what's fascinating is, in my experience, often people are more stingy with the company's money than they are with their personal money. So it's even more so that we want to connect with them on a personal level. Additionally, because so many B2B businesses for years have used that as an excuse not to connect on a personal level or not to create emotional interactions, if you start doing it, you'll really stand out. Because that customer is used to having other B2B interactions with the other vendors they work with. So if you go above and beyond to make the interactions more personal and personalized, that will move the dial more than you can imagine and create some really great interactions, not only for you, but for the long-term success of the relationship.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great point. And because so many people are doing this so badly, it is an opportunity, isn't it, to just changing little things that stand out. You don't have to be perfect.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier, Jürgen, your background as a scientist. You know, with all due respect to everyone, this isn't rocket science that we're doing here, okay? This is not complicated. This is about showing your customers that the statements on your website about how much you care about them line up with your behavior. That's it. It's just about showing you care. And even if you can find in every interaction, if you go into a call with a customer or into a meeting with a customer thinking, what is one thing I can do in this meeting to let them know that they matter? And that's it. One thing that lets them know that they matter. What could that be? Well, it could be referring to something that they talked about in a previous conversation that lets them know you were listening. It can be thanking them for their time. You know, before we hit record on our conversation, you were asking me about how my experience at Thanksgiving was. So we're recording this. Last week was Thanksgiving here in the United States. With all due respect, Jürgen, you're in Australia. You didn't celebrate Thanksgiving last week. But the fact that you know that I probably did because I'm based in the United States, and you mention that, even just saying, how was your Thanksgiving, is enough for me to say, wow, he cares about me personally. And then at the risk of sharing too much of our conversation before we hit record, you mentioned you'd been recently on a bike ride with your daughter. So I was asking you some specifics about that. Hopefully that left you feeling that, wow, even though Joey may or may not be a big bike rider, he's at least interested in the fact that I'm interested in this. And these little things are how we make the world go round. They are how we create connection. And it doesn't need to be, you know, when you asked me and when I asked you, I don't think either of us did it with this goal of the first thing we want to do is create a personal and emotional connection so that we can have a successful podcast. Yeah. No, it was, we were being human beings. We're about to have a long conversation. Let's build some rapport. Let's get to know each other a little bit so the conversation feels more familiar when we hit record. The same holds true in our interactions with our customers. And I would posit, because the typical customer interaction ideally is an even longer interaction than the duration of a podcast episode, we want to create more opportunities for bonding and connection.
That's right. Yeah. And often, I mean, getting to know people at a more personal level helps with understanding the customer and understanding their goals and needs. You mentioned earlier that if we understand what they really want, we can help them, help guide them on that journey. And what they really want may not be our product or service. For example, we help people grow their businesses through marketing services and through podcasting services. What they really want is a lifestyle that and a business that supports their lifestyle and a lifestyle that gives them freedom and independence to do whatever interests them. Well, if I understand what interests them in their life and how much time they'd like to spend on that, well, that gives me a much better context for how can I help them grow their business.
Absolutely. You know, it's so interesting. I was talking to a group in the wedding industry recently, and we were talking about the bridal gown. And everybody thinks that the bridal gown is about what you wear on the day of the wedding. It's actually not. The goal that the bride is trying to accomplish is only proven when she gets the photos back of the wedding and she looks beautiful in the dress.
Yeah.
The day of wearing the dress, she may feel beautiful. And yes, that's a part of it. And it's a necessary piece of the journey. But we really know when we see the photos, how did it look? Right. And so when we get to know our customers, we can actually find out what they're trying to do. And as you alluded to earlier, one of the best ways to actually grow your business is to clearly tell customers who aren't the right fit that they're not the right fit. Now, that seems counterintuitive. That seems like it's leaving money on the table and not trying to get them all and win them all and scale and grow. The fact of the matter is, your credibility when you say, you know, I'm not exactly sure that we'll be able to help you because you've said what your goals are and our product, well, it'll help you get some of the way there. It won't help you get all of the way there. You should consider our competitor's product. Our competitor's product can help you achieve those things that you said you wanted and I think could maybe be a better fit for you. Now, some people would say, Joey, you're insane. You're recommending your competitor for the right customer? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because if that customer goes over there and is happy, they will think higher of me, even than they think of the person that delivered it to, because I'm the one that sent them there, right? We remember who made the recommendation for us. So I think it's one of those things where if we come from an honest place of always trying to do best by our customer, we succeed. I had a situation where I was subscribed. We talk about the subscription services early in our conversation. I had a software as a service that I was subscribed to for 3 years without logging into it. Now, I'm not proud to admit that, okay? This is a business service. It was a project management software called Basecamp, okay? It's an incredibly successful, incredibly useful product. When I was running my ad agency, I used it every day. But when I became a speaker, I quit using it as much as I used before. I still had the subscription. I still used it from time to time. But I went about almost 3 years, 2.5 years without using it. And I finally was looking at a credit card statement one day and I realized, oh my goodness, I've been paying $25 a month for 2.5 years without logging in. And I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed for my own behavior. But I thought, you know, I really like this company. I've had great success. I've been a loyal customer for a long time. I wonder what would happen if I canceled. So I reached out to the company and I did an online chat with them and I said, forgive me, I need to cancel. Here's why. I'm not in that business anymore. They said, no problem. We'll process your cancellation. I said, thank you so much. I said, by the way, as you can probably tell from looking at my account, I haven't used it in the last 2.5 years. If there was any way that I could get some credit back for that $25 monthly expense I'd been doing, I would take it as a personal favor and I'd really appreciate it. I waited and the little dots appeared on the chat to show they were typing. And the person responded back and said, Joey, I checked your account and you were slightly wrong. You haven't used it in not 2 years and 6 months. It's been 2 years and 8 months since you actually last logged in. At $25 a month, that means we have 24 months plus 8. It actually means you have 32 months that you paid for the service and you weren't using it. I am processing a full refund to your credit card now. Jürgen, I was blown away. I have told that story 1,000 times. I know for a fact that people have signed up to use Basecamp because of the way they treated me. They were willing to give me money back because they recognized I hadn't used their service. That's why they have one of the top project management softwares on the planet. And their customers are loyal fans. And why me, even though I'm not a customer today, will still happily sing their praises. Not because they gave me the money back, but because they were willing to do the right thing.
And also, if you ever find yourself in a situation of needing a project management system, you'll be basically...
Without hesitation. Yeah. Without hesitation, I will immediately sign up.
Yeah, that's a great story. And I guess coming back to what you said earlier about the wrong customer and referring, you know, somebody who might not be a good fit or who you might not feel confident in delivering their goals for them, referring them on to other people. I mean, that is the right thing to do. And often I have this conversation with people, and I also point out to them that if you do this customer journey thing really well and you get people to an advocate, if you have a customer that's not a really good fit, everybody's frustrated. The customer's frustrated, you're frustrated, your employees are frustrated, but everybody's doing their best. So you actually get to the point where they might become advocates because you're doing your best and you're actually getting some results for them. But it's Absolutely. Costing you an enormous amount of energy. Guess what happens? They refer the same kind of people to you, so you get more of those people.
Exactly, 100%. I only want ideal fit customers because guess what? They know other ideal fit customers. Yeah. I don't want the customer that is maybe 1% a good fit and 99% a bad fit, because everyone they know is probably of the same ratio and they're only going to bring me more problems. I totally agree with you. It's the question becomes, are we playing business for the short term or the long term? One of the frustrations I have with how business is done in the United States and increasingly around the world is that it is very short-term minded. What are the successes of this quarter? We see this driven in the public markets. What have you done for me lately? You know, in Japan, they have 500-year business plans. 500-year business plans. That's a different way of thinking about lifetime value of a customer and about what you're willing to do in this quarter when you're thinking about the value of the customer over the next decade or the next century. Or the next millennia. These are completely different conversations that I think allow people to make better decisions long term. So when in doubt, think about the long term impact more than the short term impact. And I promise it'll work out, because I imagine you've had this experience, Jürgen. I think back on some of the earlier days in my business career, and I think, you know, it seemed like such a big deal then to lose that client or to not get the renewal or to not close the sale. And now looking back on it, I'm like, you know, it all worked out just fine.
Yeah.
You know, it really did. And lots of times I think we get so worked up about the things that don't work out instead of celebrating the things that do work out. Entrepreneurs and business owners, as a general rule, are horrible at celebrating their success. They're great at singing their failures and beating themselves up for the things that get wrong. But you know, for the folks listening, go out and celebrate what's working in your life. I guarantee if you're listening to this podcast, more things are going well in your life than are going poorly in your life. The fact that we even have the technology to listen to a podcast and the time to actually listen to it is worthy of celebration.
That's right. And also, if we focus more and more on the positive stuff, then we're likely to notice a lot more other positive stuff rather than focusing on the negatives and, oh, there's another thing that went wrong.
100% makes for a better life. And as a scientist, you'll appreciate all the research shows this. The research around gratitude and giving thanks for the things that are going well is proven to increase our health and longevity, increase our overall wellness, increase the success of our business, increase the success of our personal relationships across the board. The more thankful we are, the happier we are.
Yeah, that's great. Well, on that note, I think, you know, I could go on talking customer experience journeys forever, but I think it's a good time now to move on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully we'll get some really insightful answers that will inspire people to go and do something awesome today. Not that you've already given us a lot.
Well, thanks, Jürgen. I'll do my best. No pressure here. This is the speed round. I'll do my best to drop some good ideas.
Yeah. What do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Have more and different experiences. The older we get, the more we have a tendency to do the same things. Get out of the norm. Break it down. Go to the bookstore and pick up four or five magazines in a genre you've never read and just thumb through them. You don't even have to buy them. Yeah. Just sit down and look at the pictures. Get exposed to new things. When somebody suggests you want to come try this new rock climbing experience we're doing and you've never been rock climbing and you're 50 years old, say, yeah, I'll go. What's the worst thing that can happen? You know, I'll give it a try and see how it goes. Have new experiences. It will create new pathways in your brain that will make innovation much easier.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. And also, you know, there's things about seeing those different experiences that, that's how they do it in this genre, and that might work in what I'm doing.
Exactly.
What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Had all these different jobs, right? Worked in a ton of different industries. You know, people will ask me regularly, they're like, you're the customer guy. Who's your ideal customer? The problem with that question is it's not any one industry. I never want it to be one industry. I want to work across industries, across the world in different size businesses, because the more I do that, the more it allows me to innovate and come up with new ideas. Lots of times something that is standard in one industry is a completely new idea in a different industry. And so by having those different experiences and getting that exposure, that allows me to bring over new ideas, apply them to my clients. They end up thinking I'm a genius, and I get to just say, hey, I just try to keep my eyes and ears open as I navigate through my day to find new ideas we could apply to your industry.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, I just thought of something then while you were talking, which is, you know, in that example, and that's the, I think it's reasonably common in the real estate industry when the real estate agent sells a house to a couple or family, and when that family then moves into that house, that they have a little basket of goodies and flowers and welcome them in, which is, you know, a nice little touch. But I think that's pretty standard in the real estate industry. And yet you look at that and say, well, wouldn't that be cool if you did that in other businesses? And then all of a sudden you're an innovator.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then you can go to the real estate industry and say, well, if everyone else is doing it, stop doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do something different, right? Yeah. Don't copy what everybody else is doing. Go find a different idea from another industry. Come with a celebration 6 months after they've moved in. Instead of giving them a basket of goodies that you think are goodies that they might like, instead, why not give them a gift certificate to 10 local restaurants in the new neighborhood they've moved into and say, here's the deal. Go try all the restaurants in town. Tell us what you think, which one you like best, you know, give them the chance to have a broader experience themselves.
Yeah. That's great advice. All right. Now, you mentioned Basecamp before and you haven't used that for a while, but do you have a resource that you use a lot now?
You know, I think Basecamp is definitely a great one. I don't have, to be candid, any one specific resource that I use as a tool that I think really works well for innovation per se. But one thing that I've noticed for productivity, and this is going to maybe be an alternative answer to what you're expecting, I would suggest that people consider making devices for specific tasks. What I mean by that is most folks have a computer, they have a phone, they may have a tablet or some type of a reader. Consider, instead of having the same apps and the same tools on all of those devices, narrowing them down. So for example, I don't have social media on my phone. I only have it on my laptop. So if I'm going to go on Facebook and it's night and I'm laying in bed, I would have to wake up and go to my office and log into my laptop to access Facebook. Now, it's not that I'm anti-Facebook. It's just I have decided for my own productivity to put certain devices, certain apps connected with certain devices. And I found that that makes me more successful in being able to do those things.
Yeah, it's kind of removing distractions and being more decisive or more, what's the right word? Yeah, decisive, I guess, about
when you're going. Well, I think maybe even more discerning. More discerning, yeah. about when you're going on certain apps and when you're using certain tools and how you're using them.
All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track? And we've probably talked a lot about this one.
Yeah, I think the best way to keep a client on track is to have a clear checklist and a clear plan for where you want them to be in the process and to track where they are against that predetermined checklist. So, you know, using the eight phases as an example, where is the client in those eight phases? What are they doing? And you should be able at a moment's notice to have anyone in your organization be able to say, well, Jürgen is in the affirm phase, Joey is in the accomplish phase, whatever it may be, so that everybody on the team knows what's happening with that client or with that customer at that point in the life cycle and at that point in the journey.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. And knowing where people are in the particular journey and what they might have done or what you might have done with them in that particular phase and what's still outstanding. All right, now what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
All right, well, this is where I might be a little contrarian, Jürgen. I know I'm on an innovative podcast where there's lots of discussion about innovation. So I'm going to move away from innovation to create a differentiator, because you can certainly do that. But I think the best way to differentiate yourself is on how you make customers feel. At the risk of being touchy-feely and emotional, I think the emotions your customers are feeling will last much longer than the features and the benefits that you've built into your technology or your product or your service offering. I think paying attention to the emotional journey of the customer, deciding which emotions you want them to feel, and then building in systems, processes, and steps to make sure that they experience those emotions will allow you to differentiate yourself from the competition in a way that not only stands out, but is very, very difficult for them to replicate. Because even if they get the same emotion right, they're going to come about creating it a different way, which may be more successful or less successful, and then you get the opportunity to kind of adjust accordingly. But I think thinking more about how your customers feel is a great way to stand out in the marketplace.
Yeah, yeah. That's great advice. And it reminds me of, was it Maya Angelou that, I can't remember the exact quote, but basically it concludes with, people don't forget how you made them feel.
Correct.
All right then. Now, thanks for this, Joey. This has been really fabulous. I've really enjoyed having this conversation. Now, where can people reach out and find out more about you and about the book Never Lose a Customer Again, and maybe even reach out and say thank you for what you've shared?
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that, Jürgen. Well, the book, as you mentioned, is called Never Lose a Customer Again. It's available on Amazon, at your local bookstore. There's an audiobook that I actually narrate. So if you've enjoyed the sound of listening to my voice on the podcast, I can read the whole book to you through your headphones while you're going about your day. So would love folks to check that out. And I think it's a fun way. It's so that people know, we go over all 8 phases. There are 46 case studies in the book, companies small, medium, and large. There's really hopefully something in there for everyone that they can apply to their business. And I make a promise in the first chapter, if you read the book and you don't get value, just send me a message and I'll happily refund the cost of purchase. Because similar to our gym example we used earlier, I don't want customers to pay me to not get use out of the product. So if you buy the book and you don't actually use it and get value, just let me know. I'll happily take it off your hands and reimburse you for your expense. In terms of following along and some free gifts and free opportunities, the best place is my website, joeycoleman.com. That's J-O-E-Y, probably like a 5-year-old, you know, or in Australia, a baby kangaroo. Yeah. Joey Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N.com. There you'll find videos, you'll find articles, you'll find all sorts of things that can help you enhance the experience that your customers are having, so that hopefully they'll stay around longer and you can continue to grow your business through retention as opposed to growing it through acquisition.
Great. Thanks, Joey. And we'll have links to all of that in the show notes, and I can certainly vouch for the audiobook. I listened to that and I really enjoyed your voice, and there are lots of great tips in there and lots of great examples of both good and bad customer experiences.
Thanks, Jürgen.
All right. Now, what sort of number one piece of advice would you like to leave our listener today, you know, particularly if they want to be a leader or an innovator in their field?
So I would say this. I think most people in business think that to be a leader in their field, they need to know everything about their field and they need to spend all their time, energy focused on their field. And while you certainly need to know the industry you're working in, I think the people who excel the most are ones who have experience that goes beyond their job. They have experience that goes beyond the industry they're working in. So it's probably no surprise that it ties to my recommendation earlier. Have experiences outside of your industry. Get involved in organizations that give you insight into other businesses, nonprofits, government entities, local community organizations, places where humans are gathered who are doing things differently than what you do all every day. Those perspectives not only make for a more successful career, but I would posit make for a more successful life.
Yeah.
Life is not one-dimensional. Life is multidimensional. And I think the challenge we all have is as time goes on, You know, when we're kids, I have two young children. I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. Everything is new to them. Everything. I want to maintain that same type of curiosity and excitement for myself until the day I die, right? I want there to be new things and new inputs and new ideas. Make sure you're going beyond the algorithms that are trying to pitch you all of the exact same and getting into different things as often as possible.
Yeah. And that's great advice. I mean, I love that because I'm a lifelong learner as well. And the curiosity thing, I think, is what keeps you young and keeps you excited and provides a whole lot of variety. But the other thing it does, I think, is it teaches you to explore and ask smart questions that is good practice for understanding what your customers are really trying to achieve. Because when you're
Absolutely.
In a strange environment, people doing different things than what you used to, you know, one of the obvious questions is, why do you do that? Or, you know, What's the result when you do it this way?
Yeah, don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, it's interesting. My youngest son is 4, and almost every single day he asks me a question that I have no idea what the answer is. Yeah. Right, Daddy, why is the ocean blue and the sky is blue?
Yeah.
That's a really good question that I would, you know, I'm not exactly sure why the answer is, but yeah. Let's see what we can figure out, you know. Well, why are blueberries blue too? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we're asking all the questions about the color blue, but it gives insight as to why do we accept anything at face value? Why aren't we willing to challenge and ask questions about everything? Usually it's because we don't want to seem foolish. My theory is, those who are willing to ask questions and quote unquote seem like they don't have the answers or seem foolish are usually the ones that we want to follow. And they're usually the ones we want to listen to. And they're usually the ones we want to believe.
Yeah. Great advice. And certainly, I mean, one of the big ways that children learn and acquire all this knowledge is by asking those questions. And yes, you know, when they don't know that they have this ego. They don't have this ego thing around, I don't know the answer here, so I might appear foolish or I might appear not smart. Whereas when we get to adults, we've had this ingrained in us that if you keep asking those questions, people might think that you're not really smart or you, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, finally then, Joey, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Oh, goodness. There are so many amazing folks that I think you could chat with. One that comes to mind because I think he's a great blend of innovation and experience is my good friend Jesse Cole. Jesse is an owner of a baseball team here in the United States called the Savannah Bananas. And if that name isn't enough to get your audience curious and interested off the top of the bat, you know, what he's done to create innovative experiences for not only the fans who attend his games, but the players who play on his field is pretty impressive. So if you'd like to have a conversation with Jesse, I'm happy to send you some info, happy to make an introduction. He's a great guy.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Now, if I remember correctly, Jesse featured in the book.
I can't remember if I talked about Jesse in this book. He and I have been mentioned in similar books before.
All right.
And he's definitely going to be in my next book. And I've talked about him on some podcasts. I'm trying to remember.
Well, maybe that's where
if
I heard you. Yeah.
I've mentioned him on my podcast. I've talked about him a number of times. So maybe from there, but he'll definitely be in the new book.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Joey. This has really been wonderful. Thanks for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today. I've enjoyed this immensely, and we've overcome a few technical hitches at the beginning, but I think we've had a great conversation. So I wish you all the best and let's keep in touch.
Thanks, Jürgen. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the show.
I hope you enjoyed that delightfully engaging and informative conversation with Joey and took something away from his episode. A key lesson that I took away was to focus on each step of the customer journey in how I want my customers to feel and how I can create an experience to have them feel that way. I'd love to know what you took away from Joey's episode. Leave a comment, below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Joey Coleman. That is JoeyColeman. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Joey Coleman. You'll also find contact information there for getting in touch with Joey, as well as links to his website, to the book Never Lose a Customer Again, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation. Joey suggested we have a conversation with Jesse Cole of the Savannah Bananas baseball team on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Jesse, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Joey Coleman. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. But most importantly, in less than 30 minutes, the value is that you'll gain absolute clarity about your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or our help with podcast production, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we'll set up a quick call just to get to know one another and find out whether we're a good fit. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Sarah Anderson of Visibility Co. and Nigel Eccles of Flick App and the Pod Squad. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jurgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.